107.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your incredibly capable host for today's journey into new view of safety, Safety 2, high reliability, human performance, and reliable systems discussions. My name's Todd Conklin. How are you? Been a pretty interesting week for me. Holy cow. Summer is vastly encroaching upon my world, and the life is getting better and better every day. Lots of interesting stuff. Gosh, this weekend was crazy. My mother was inducted into the Educators Hall of Fame, so I got to go to that, and that was very cool, and I enjoyed it immensely. And a bunch of travel, heading to Canada on Sunday. Not my favorite day to travel, but we're going to do some work early in the week, so got to go up there. Getting the last little touches on a new book, and that'll be out and ready for the masses soon. It's looks like it's going to be called Better Questions. And it's really a discussion on human performance, high reliability, and team learning, or learning teams. Kind of the next step. It's a really good place to go with this information and ways to sort of learn actually how work happens at the sharp end of the stick, or for my Australian friends, New Zealand friends, the pointy end of the stick, because pointy is better than sharp for you guys down under. What else? Oh, lots of stuff. It's pretty good. Today's podcast is really interesting. You're going to like it a lot. Randy Cadu, he's a lot of things. He's a former military aviator who got really involved in organizational safety, system safety, came up through the HRO ranks, and kind of ended up at a master's degree in engineering at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, UAB. Great program, kind of one of the stellar programs in the country on kind of new view safety. He's a really good guy, and his conversation is I think you're going to like it. There's lots of stuff going on here, and Randy's just fun. I mean, he did not call me sir once in this conversation, which is a huge miracle. Because almost every other time I see him, he calls me sir all the time, which kind of makes me feel creepy. And I already feel creepy enough. I don't want to feel creepier. But no, he's good. And we talked about where he is, where he came from, and where he's heading. And we talk a lot about his new book. And his new book is really interesting. It's definitely a book I'd put on your reading list, especially if you work with crews of people in high-risk work. Randy's book really leverages all these new view approaches and a really positive way to use crews to not only problem identify, but problem solve. And you're hearing lots about that because that's an important part of what happens. What else is going on? Well, we're heading into the summer season, and the summer season means conferences galore and lots of vacations and different forms of risks. Many of you in the safety world are going to start down the journey of bee stings, the most complex of all problems, the bee sting. And we should maybe even have a podcast on bee stings, because it is one area that it's hard to understand how to manage the capacity for an organization to handle a bee sting. But until then, let's listen carefully to what Randy has to say, because I think you'll find Randy's podcast to be entertaining and fun. And he's been on a really pretty great journey. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here's Randy Cadu.
Okay, what was that last question you asked?
What is it you do? What is it you're doing?
Well, I got a couple irons in the fire. One of the jobs that I do is, which I'm very thankful for and I really enjoy, I work for the University of Alabama at Birmingham. I'm the program manager for their Master of Engineering and Advanced Safety Engineering and Management program, which emphasizes
UAB. I'm cheering.
Go Blazers. You know, they
did
really well this
like
year in basketball.
Is it Blazers like the jackets you wear at a dinner, or what do you mean by Blazer?
The dragon. Blaze the dragon is the mascot. So
I was thinking it would be the jackets you wear at dinner, and that would be a very interesting mascot.
Well, maybe we could get Blaze the dragon to wear a blazer at dinner. That might be a new way to go.
A blazer blazer. I like it. Go with it, man. Go.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's good. You know, we focus on teaching prevention through design curriculum, and then leadership and management resilience, system safety, and all that stuff. But I'm also the founder of a company called VSpeed, and you know, we focus on helping companies reach operational excellence however they define that. But our focus is on leadership, resilience, risk management, and trying to help them do better, help them use a system approach, which really emphasizes the human as the most important part of that system.
So do you do more like long-term interventions with clients, or do you do one time and out, or what's the perfect scenario look like for you client-wise?
Well, the perfect scenario client-wise is you know, a great company that is doing well but has areas they want to improve in, and that are willing to try different things, because, you know, we don't go with a traditional compliance-based approach. There's other folks that are really good at that. And so we focus on another area. We focus on areas that largely do with crew performance and how the crew integrates within the system of an organization. So ultimately, you know, we would want to have a site visit, have a discussion, first of all, find out, you know, what the client's needs are, what some of the issues are that they're having, and how we might be able to help them. And then set up a site visit, go shake hands and meet some of their leadership, their management, and really their line operators. You know, I like to sit down and chat with the workers and, you know, maybe grab a bite to eat with them, find out some of the issues that they're dealing with. And then from there, find out, you know, whether or not they need tools developed, whether they not need some training or some educational resource material or that type of thing, but try to define the goals, see what they're looking for, and whether it's a short-term or long-term intervention or tool development or education and training, it really depends on the client. But we definitely like to work with folks that that are interested in going on beyond compliance and exploring other areas to improve not only safety but performance as well.
When you say beyond compliance, are you really talking about they have a pretty good compliance culture, they have pretty good compliance tools, they have relatively good compliance performance?
Yes. I mean, compliance, and you know this, compliance is definitely required. I mean, you don't want to be a company, especially a company that deals in high-risk or high-hazard environments, and not be a compliant organization, not follow regulations, because those are a baseline.
At what point do you think compliance stops being providing safety?
I think at the point where
it clearly stops at some point. I mean, you know, it does a good job for a while, and then it gets to a point where it kind of stops creating safety.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we can be over compliant, or maybe you want to call it over reliant on certain things that we think are making us safer, when in fact maybe they are making us less safe. And you know, I can think of certain examples from aviation, for example. And let me back up here. You know, my background before I started VSpeed and working with UAB, but before I started my consulting and educating and training, I was a military aviator and ultimately ended up in safety. But you know,
did you always want to be an aviator?
Yes.
Go back to that whole military thing, because that's really interesting to me.
So, yeah, so I don't when think you I were answered little... the question you asked me, but okay,
it's a conversation. I promise.
Yeah.
Right now, as we talk, there are people jogging. One guy's filing crap. Another person's driving in their car. They're just listening. We could probably talk about anything, and they'd like it, right?
Especially since you're the interviewer. Of course.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's more of a conversation. It's not really an interview. I don't want to do interviews. Interviews sound boring to me. I want to talk to people who do this cool work and see how they get there. Like, so when you were a little kid, did you always want to be an aviator?
I did. You know, from the time I was, as long as I can remember, you know, a plane would fly over, I'd look up in the sky, and I said, one day I want to do that. So, and especially a military aviator too. And then, you know, I found my way into the Marine Corps and, you know, was very blessed, had a great career, and got to do some really neat stuff and fly some pretty, pretty awesome airplanes. So cool. It was great. And it really shaped a lot of the way I think nowadays.
Were you kind of top gunny?
No.
Or is that some?
No, no. So I flew the KC-130. It's a C-130, or the Marine Corps variant's a KC. The K stands for refueling. So we refueled. You asked about Top Gun. You know, we refueled those guys and gals. You know, the fighter pilots and the attack pilots. We refueled jets and helicopters. But, yeah, it was a lot of fun. Got to do a lot of neat stuff. We also do aerial delivery, you know, cargo and paratroopers and that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we call it assault support. So our role was to support the other folks and support the Marines in their businesses. So it was very fun. I got a lot out of it.
So this question may be goofy, but I think it's an important question. When did you get interested in sort of system safety while you were an aviator? I mean, I would guess you're always interested in safety as an aviator, but when did you get interested in sort of organizational safety?
Right. No, that's not a goofy question at all. And it's funny because a lot of folks, they think of Marine Corps and they think, well, you guys are just reckless and you know, you don't pay attention to safety. And not everybody thinks that, but, you know, plenty do that I've come across. And it really couldn't be farther from the truth, especially in aviation, because safety is inherently built into our operations because we can't go out and crash an airplane every time, or a squadron would basically be gone in a week for the most part. So we have to build safe practices into everything that we do. But it was reinforced, you know, to me from the time I was a flight student that we had to do things as, you know, as safely as feasible. And then throughout my progression in the Marine Corps, you know, safety kind of evolved in different ways in the Marine Corps. But ultimately, towards the last 4 years in my career, I ended up the 4 years before I retired, and I say retired, I'm not really retired. I think I work more now than I did then. But 4 years before I left the Marine Corps, I ended up in a position called the Director of Safety and Standardization in one of our training squadrons. The Navy calls it safety officer, I think. But essentially, I was responsible for, you know, all the standardization and the compliance and the safety. And in the process, that's how I met some of the HRO folks who you know very well. And that's how I also, you know, was blessed to find my way into the UAB program. And over the course of the next few years, I got increasing responsibility for people, more people underneath me, more of a leadership role, which safety is extremely important. And when you have, in my opinion, when you have more people, more direct reports, you learn more about how people act and how they behave and how they think. And I started finding problems, and I started realizing that, you know, we have to get away from this blame culture. We don't need to blame first and ask questions later. We need to use a questioning process to find out why things happen, because if we simply blame and punish or blame and discipline, we might not ever learn from it. And that's also something that you taught me and that I learned from you as well. So throughout the last 4 years of my career, I really got into that organizational and safety side and system safety side.
What attracted you to HRO, the HRO stuff? Because we first met in D.C. probably, mm-hmm. In the NTSB conference room, in the little side room to the NTSB conference room is where I kind of remember meeting you the first time.
Yeah, man, you have a good memory. That's the first time we met. It was 2012.
I can't remember anything important. Well, so important stuff goes away. But that kind of crap I got all day long, man. anything that's not important.
I'm with you. So that was the first time we met. The way I found my way into HRO, I was actually looking for a potential speaker for a safety stand down. And I think through a search engine, I kind of stumbled upon HRO. Shot a web inquiry or an email, and Rear Admiral Mercer emailed me back. And then Dave Van Stralen, Dr. Van Stralen, somehow we got connected, and they got me onto the conference calls and invited me to speak. And, you know, I've spoken at the 2012 and 2000, three conferences. So 2012, or maybe it was 2011. No, that's when we met, was 2011. So 2011, 2012, and 2014. I spoke. So it's been great. And what interests me about HRO is that as a philosophy, and when you look at Wyke's five principles, it doesn't necessarily say that we're always going to be ultra safe and we're never going to have accidents, that we're never going to be perfect, but we can apply some of these concepts from a leadership and management philosophy, and we can continuously manage performance and learn from it and seek out resilience. So we're constantly learning, we're constantly striving to get better, and yes, we will make mistakes, but we'll constantly learn from it, and we will use the people at the heart of the organization to make things better and to make things safer.
Do you see HRO, or the tenets of HRO, the classic Wyke Suckler tenets, do you see them as a way to become safer or tenets of a safe, already safe organization?
Yes.
Okay, that was a very good answer. It was cheesy, but it was a good answer.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing: if an organization is trying to become safer, and let's we mentioned the Wyke and Sutcliffe principles, preoccupation with failure, or being preoccupied with the things that could fail, I think that lends itself to a solid risk assessment program when people are constantly striving to look at the way they're operating, to look at maybe some of the hazards and ways they can mitigate those. So organizations that are looking to become safer, I think they can use those. And I think an organization that's already at levels where hopefully they're never satisfied. I don't think we ever want to be truly satisfied with our level of performance because we'll stagnate. But let's say an organization that is somewhat comfortable or has decent lagging indicators and leading indicators for safety. I think if they can apply the concepts of HRO to their already solid system, you kind of infuse that culture within the organization by working those principles, not only reading them and talking about them, but working them on a regular basis.
Well, my theory on that is really, and I've thought a bunch about this. So I've been fortunate enough, and gosh, you've made a career out of it, but I've been fortunate enough to work for lots of really very, very reliable organizations. I was on the phone last night, actually, with the guys at the Park Service, the search and rescue guys, the Grand Canyon guys. It was really funny. They, mm-hmm. they were describing their shop floor as being 279 miles long, a half a mile wide, and filled with raging water is how they were talking about safety, and that was their shop floor analogy.
Wow.
Those guys are incredibly reliable. But they would never say they were incredibly reliable. They're incredibly fixated with potential failure. They listen to weak signals. There's a strong deference for expertise. I mean, they meet all the criteria, but they don't believe they're even close to reliable. And I think it's really interesting that highly reliable organizations don't ever assume they're highly reliable organizations.
Right, and that's interesting. You use the term highly reliable organizations, and then there's also high reliability organizations. And I think
yeah, and you'd have to really give me $1,000 to tell me there's a difference. But go ahead.
And I don't know that there's a difference. I don't think maybe it's a nuance, but I think what you're getting at is they don't necessarily want to call themselves highly reliable because once you admit it, once you say you're there, maybe you stop seeking improvement.
Oh, wouldn't you think you would?
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as you believe your own press, you're always screwed.
Right.
So you have to be careful never to believe your own press.
So I like, when we think about high reliability, or another way I've heard it put through some of the HRO folks in the conferences is reliability seeking or high reliability seeking organizations. So I like that term because if you're constantly seeking, then you're never going to say we've arrived. And if you don't say we've arrived, like you said, you're not going to stagnate.
Yeah, that's probably true. So when you go into a company, what do you do for them? What can you do for them?
What I try to do is find out where their pain points are. Sorry about that. My screensaver just came on. Can you still hear me?
Oh, yeah. You sound better. You sound thinner and younger. You sound great.
I must have just gone to the gym when my screensaver came on. I try to find the pain points in the company. I try to find out where their issues are. A lot of times, and I try to never go in with a predefined idea of what's going on. I try to keep an open mind, which is sometimes difficult because a lot of the times you find some common areas that could use improvement. A lot of companies have employees that are overworked. They're in many cases they're either understaffed or they're staffed appropriately, but they have so many things that they have to manage that they have difficulty keeping up with it. And you can only fit so many hours in a workday. So what I try to find out is where their pain points are. What are the challenges that they're facing? What are some of the recurring or even non-recurring, some of the one-offs? But what types of incidents or accidents are they experiencing? And then try to figure out ways where maybe it's a crew resource management or a crew performance tool that could be designed to help them out, like a checklist. or maybe it's some training, you know. And with my book, Team Leadership in High Hazard Environments, I really tried to give a roadmap, an actionable strategy for people who want to try some of this stuff on their own to improve their performance.
Right, right, right. I really want to talk about the book too. Let me ask a question. Your sure. initial analysis, when you go into a company and look at things, is your initial analysis the first things you find wrong, what you end up fixing?
I think it goes deeper than that. I think it really is not necessarily the first things. I think it's after a deep conversation. I'm a fan of ride-alongs. When I can get those, when they'll let me do that, so I can shadow folks. But a lot of times, it's not even necessarily something people know that needs fixing or needs changing. But when you watch people work, you have these deep conversations with them. You find out that what seems like a minor nuance may actually be a very important detail. So I would say no, not necessarily. It's the first thing you find that we would try to fix. And you know, I don't necessarily know that fixing is the right way to describe it, but helping and coaching along the way through that process, you know, it does help to correct some things.
Yeah, I think fixing is always kind of the wrong word, but it's the one I jump to all the time. Because
I'm with you.
But I like the idea that you provide an opportunity to go deeper than they know how to go, and deeper than other people know how to go. Because I think the idea that the first things you see are almost never the problem, they're almost always the symptom of deeper problems within inside the organization, is really complex to people who own the problem. That kind of discovery is hard, and it's a little messy. And bringing somebody in who says, that looks bad on the surface, but let's not stop there. That's exactly. More an indicator. Let's look at deeper issues that are driving sort of this bad outcome. That's actually, I think, really a valuable that's your maturity and your experience in action with the company. I think that's really valuable to them, so that's pretty cool. Did I lose you?
No, I'm still here.
Are you lost in thought with my profound comments?
Yes. Yeah, I'm still impressed with the quality of your microphone.
Are you really? Thanks. Thanks.
Yeah, I think it's good. And you know, it's part of consulting and training and educating is let's look at the side benefits of it. You get to meet some really cool people and help people. And, you know, sure, we definitely want to help them solve problems. I think a lot of times when you help them solve their own problems, there's a lot more benefit out of it because then they know how to do it themselves next time, or they at least understand the process. But the side benefit is you get to meet so many interesting people and the amazing I'm fascinated by the different work that companies do and the human spirit, what people can accomplish. It fascinates me to learn how every day they can accomplish this amazing work, a lot of times under very grueling conditions, you know, high hazard environments, and they're putting out product, they're putting out services, and it's really what makes America and the world grow. You know, it's what makes us tick. And through working with different clients, you know, I've realized that, you know, hey, I might take some of these things for granted. You know, when I turn on a light switch or when, you know, I turn the stove on and use natural gas, have I been taking these things for granted? When you see people do this amazing work, digging things out of the ground, for example, mining, it's truly amazing to understand what they do on a daily basis to get the job done. And it really puts a perspective on safety and performance.
And I think to an extent, that's really an important piece of data to carry into the conversation, because for the most part, people are really, really good at what they do, and they mostly do good work.
Absolutely.
And you know, so their systems are mostly stable, and they mostly don't get hurt.
Right.
And so now we have really good people doing amazing work with amazing fidelity and really stable systems as a norm.
Yeah, but what do we focus on? What does the media focus on so much?
The negative.
Right.
So I had a guy tell me the other day, a really senior guy at a big organization said, he used a different language, but he said, if all I hear is that my workers are all a bunch of foul-ups, then I think I'm leading a company full of people who just constantly foul up. You can replace the word foul with whatever word you want. That I think is really interesting. And to me, that's where I think your work sort of builds. And I think that's really it's important for us to remember that the enemy of safety is stability. And that the more stable our work is, the more surprised we are by failure. And because failure is kind of surprising, we think of it as an anomaly, not as a normal part of built into our organizations. And that's really interesting to me.
It is. And it's interesting to me as well, too. And I think a lot of times, I like to use the term error detection, error management, because we might not always see that we're failing. And most of the time we don't fail. We succeed. But a lot of times we're making small errors. And those are – and I think this is your term. I think you said errors are a gift, right? Are near misses or gifts?
Yeah, they're like a present, right? I mean, it's the accident without the mess.
Right. So I think if we can pick up on those errors on a regular basis and learn from them, and even using the safety two ideas, learning from our successes, we can continuously improve and not rest on our laurels because I like that. The enemy of safety is stability because I've been in organizations, military organizations too, when you have these thousands and thousands and thousands of flight hours without major mishaps or catastrophes, you constantly want to stay on that cusp of safety and balance that stability, but not lose the bubble, not fall off and have an accident. And it's easy to get into that false sense of security.
Tell me about your book, because that's exciting.
But yeah, thanks for bringing up the book.
Are you kidding? I'm psyched about the book. The book's the greatest. Is it selling well? Are you at Barnes & Noble's next Tuesday signing them or anything? What's going on?
Actually, there was a little a local book signing thing here in Birmingham. I couldn't clear my schedule to do it, so I missed out on that opportunity. But I think it's going well. It's I don't know your experience, but sometimes it's hard to really track how it's doing well, but. I can see it selling in Amazon. I can see the numbers ticking down, and I'm getting good feedback from it. So that's great.
Say the title, author's name, and all the stuff so that people who are listening can put it on their reading list.
Thank you, sir. The author's me, Randy Cadieux, C-A-D-I-E-U-X, and the title is Team Leadership in High-Hazard Environments, Performance, Safety, and Risk Management Strategies for Operational Teams. And I wanted to keep that subtitle in there. Had some discussions with the editors, but I wanted to keep that subtitle because when you look at the book, you think, well, this is a leadership book, but it's so much beyond leadership. I mean, leadership is a very important aspect of it because this book was really written for frontline operators, frontline supervisors, line managers, those at the sharp end, but also those at the blunt end who are designing policies, procedures, rules, and those type of things. But really, if you look at the subtitle, it really is a book written to help people in organizations improve their performance, whatever they perform at, whether it's getting product out the door or delivering services, to help improve their safety and to give them strategies to manage risk in these high-risk or high-hazard environments.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Why should people read it?
People should read this book because they are constantly trying to improve. Anytime, and you mentioned it earlier, anytime you rest in your laurels, you think you've made it, you think you've arrived, companies are just one step away from either failure or getting knocked out by their competition and or from operational losses. As soon as we get comfortable with our levels of safety, next thing you know, something can happen that we didn't expect and didn't anticipate, and we could have a serious operational or personal loss. This book is designed and written to help alleviate those things. So it's designed to give tools to frontline operators, line managers, supervisors, and anyone in the organization to help them figure out ways to use a team-based approach, to use the team and the person as part of the system to improve all aspects of their business with an emphasis on safe operational performance. A lot of companies don't understand. They talk about safety, but they don't necessarily understand how to manage risk in time-compressed situations. And this book is really focused on organizations that operate underneath high risk conditions or within high hazards. So electrical utilities, oil and gas, mining, you name it, anyone that is exposed to dangerous conditions really should read this book, because it's designed to help them improve these areas. And a lot of times we take for granted the importance of the human, the importance of the crew, and the importance of crew leaders on the front lines doing these things day in and day out. And this book will help to reshape those opinions.
And if you want to know my cut on it, just in case you're interested, I think this book really looks at team discovery, team learning, team improvement from a level that's much different than a classic leadership or an organizational development level. It's a much more mature understanding of team-based functions in high-risk organizations from a person who really understands teams in high-risk organizations. So there's lots of good teaming books. I mean, we could. There's a million great teaming books, but there's very few teaming books that really approach this problem from through the lens of failure is really, really going to be a bad thing if it happens. And that really gives this book, I think, a huge advantage for safety professionals, reliability professionals, anybody that's in an industry or doing work where the cost of a bad outcome is untenable. And so, like, I would think it would have really good crosswalks into chemicals, any of that kind of really high-risk work where there's really the potential for a catastrophic failure to happen somewhere along the line in that system. It's an excellent book, Randy. You did a great job on it.
Well, I appreciate the comments, and, you know, I appreciate all the editorial reviews from you and Carl Weick, Lanny Floyd, Fred Manuel, Paul O'Connor. You know, there's a lot of y'all did a great job helping me with those reviews, and I appreciate you taking the time to do that. And we're on the Ashgate website and the Gower website. It is published by Gower Applied Research, but Gower's an imprint of Ashgate, as you probably know. But there's some other, you know, it's getting other other editorial reviews too from Fire and Rescue magazine. There's also one from a risk management standpoint. So it's getting some pretty good publicity out there too. And hopefully with that exposure, and I'm very much appreciative of the podcast. So hopefully
you're
with this
welcome,
exposure
man.
Too.
You're welcome. Yeah, you know, yeah. A lot of people listen to this. A lot of people listen to this. It's goofy. It's weird. It's
I know.
Fun,
I was
though.
Looking at all the. The number of – I don't know if it's the downloads or the number of subscribers that you can see on the – I don't know if it was Stitcher or
– one of those, yeah, yeah.
Maybe not Stitcher, but it's your main place that you host it. It's a website, not iTunes. But anyway, it was like huge. Something was like 8,700 or something like that.
I know.
So.
It's crazy.
Nice job.
It's nutty, man. It's nutty.
Well, it's fun. I mean, this is all good stuff.
Well, and it's a conversation, right? And it's a chance to bring really interesting people. I can't wait to talk more to you on this podcast. That'll be fun. Did we cover everything? You think we're good?
I think we're good.
Did we miss anything?
This really is a lot of fun. This is a lot more fun than an interview. So I appreciate it. You know, I guess we could talk about this stuff for probably 8 hours, but
yeah,
we bore people.
That
so.
Gets a little boring. I try to keep everything right about a half an hour. I can always give you a half an hour, you know. If I'm going to listen to something, I'll listen for a half an hour. Well, thank you, my friend, and I hope to see you soon.
Thanks very much. Yeah, hopefully at maybe another one of these HRO conferences or safety, maybe safety the safety PDC in Dallas this year. I don't know if you'll be there, but I'm planning on being there.
Oh, cool. That'll be fun. And maybe I'll hang out with you at UAB. The UAB thing's cool as well. So
absolutely.
It's
absolutely.
All good, brother. So thanks,
okay.
Sir.
Thanks, Todd.
Talk to you later.
Zowie, we got another one in the can. What'd you think? Isn't Randy interesting? This one was for the pilots that listen. Well, everyone's welcome, of course. I'm not excluding anybody. But I like how commercial pilots, military pilots have a strong understanding of performance reliability from a sharp end of the stick vantage point. Does that make sense? It does for you guys, for sure. Hey, thanks for your time. This was really fun, as always. I can't wait for the next one. Some big guys coming down the pike. You'll like them all, I'm sure. Hey, stay tuned. Subscribe, because that makes a huge difference for some reason. I don't really understand why, but it does. And let's keep listening. Talk to me. If you've got any comments, I'm always interested in what you have to say. Until then, have fun. Learn something every day. And for goodness sakes, be safe.